This is Dragon Choices, a Marvel / Dragon Riders of Pern fusion fic. Written by Sakina Ferry, read by Miss Marina 95. The story is rated explicit and contains the pairing Steve Rogers / Tony Stark. Summary: when a childhood accident leaves Tony with the remarkable ability to hear dragons, he finds out that on Pern, the dragon chooses. Whether it comes to being a dragon rider or becoming a weir woman, weir leader, he has a bumpy flight ahead. Chapter 1, Dragon Voices. Tony fidgeted as he sipped his milk and the adult spoke. Normally he'd be with his mother, but she was busy. In any case, his father was just talking with healer Maya about a special project he'd done for her. Even at 7 turns old, he would have trouble getting hurt with a healer an arm's length away. His eyes wandered around aimlessly, looking at the various bits of equipment and technical parts that were scattered everywhere. "The spinner is how they stopped the plague in the fifth pass," the healer was explaining, holding up a glass tube. Inside it was a syrupy green liquid. When she swished it, it was so thick it barely shifted at all. They separated the blood, then...
"I know my teaching ballads, woman."
The healer glared a little, but didn't object when Stark took the vial from her. "If I can do that with bigger doses of ichor, we might be able to stop the extremists. The ancients called it a virus. That's been going through the weirs. The dragons will be back up to full strength within a week."
"It's a lot of effort for something that hasn't even caused a death in the fighting ranks. We don't have the time to waste for this."
Master Smith Stark held up the vial, then shook his head and passed it to Tony. The little boy looked at it curiously, careful not to let go. It had been stoppered with wax, but the glass was the thinnest he'd ever seen. "We're in the beginning of a pass," the healer argued, voice growing hard. "We need every dragon we can muster. Weir Leader Fury says..."
"I don't care what the Weir Leader says."
Stark brought his fist down on the table, making the plates hop.
"I'm not going to..."
Tink.
At first, Tony didn't understand why they were staring at him. He jumped a little when his father had hit the table, but so had Healer Maya. It wasn't until something dripped onto his knee that he looked down and saw the bloody mess of green and red that his hands had become, sparkling with tiny slivers of the glass vial he still clutched. He stared at them, turning his palms over as he tried to make sense of it. "It doesn't hurt. Why doesn't it hurt?" he asked, voice small in the cavernous workroom. The healer took his wrists, mouth open in horror as she looked at his hands. "It's shock. I have my equipment with me. It doesn't look deep. I don't think there's any permanent damage." Tony's father made a strangled noise and half stood, fists planted on the table as he leaned over it.
"We'll take care of it. Get out."
Maya looked up at him like he'd clucked.
"Excuse me?" "I said get out."
His father grabbed Tony's elbow and pulled him off his stool and up into his arms.
"Take your spinner and your dragon blood and get out of my hall. We can handle our own troubles here."
Tony looked up at the healer's shocked face, but that turned out to be a bad idea. His hands finally realized they'd been injured. He choked a little as the pain reached up his arms, breath coming in little gasps as he tried not to scream. Then the world spun out from under him and took the pain away with it. The first time Tony woke up, his mother was using a set of tiny metal tweezers to pull out the glass shards. She must not have used numbweed, because he passed out again almost as soon as he woke, overwhelmed by the pain. The next time he woke up, he wasn't really sure he was awake. He couldn't feel his hands, except close to the wrists where the bandages chafed.
Everything was too hot, like the middle of summer instead of early spring. The shutters had been left open, showing the bright night outside, but it didn't help cool the room at all. He could hear his parents arguing, but they were just voices. His head felt stuffed thick with grit. He couldn't even make out what they were saying. But someone else was arguing too, and he could hear them perfectly.
"We should get the Master Healer. He'll know how to help,"
one voice, a woman, said. Her voice was so clear that she might have been right next to him. Just in case, Tony opened his eyes and looked past the mound of blankets that he was under. The room was blurry and only lit a little by glows, but he could tell that he was alone.
"Sakat says that it's just a thing little boys get,"
a man said, but he didn't sound very sure.
"And the smith was upset when the healer told the Weir Leader. The Weir Leader thinks it's the Iker making him sick. The healer had some from Danth, and he's too sick to fly."
Tony swallowed, but his throat was so dry that it hurt. He had to do it again before he could speak.
"Where are you?"
Both voices stopped, and Tony thought maybe they'd gone away, when the female whispered,
"Oh dear."
The starfield sky was blocked off as a faceted dragon eye peeked in. It spun with yellows and greens. Tony swayed, lost in the whirl for a moment, but then he had to close his eyes to keep from being ill on the floor. He kicked off the blankets, and a little bit of the breeze finally flowed over his too hot skin, easing the churn of his stomach as long as he kept still.
"My name is Amneth. Can you hear me?"
the female voice asked softly. He nodded, then swallowed again as bile started to sting his raw throat.
"I don't feel good."
There was a feeling like people talking behind his back. Then the door burst open, and he opened his eyes to see his mother's terrified face and a strange dragon rider in the doorway.
"Don't worry, Tony,"
Amneth murmured as his mother started to wrap the blankets around him and the room began to fade away.
"We won't let you go."
When Tony finally woke up for real, all he knew was that he wasn't at home anymore. There were none of the hard, sharp smells that the Smithcraft Hall always had, and the bed was much too big. Everything was plain, without a single toy or project anywhere. He strained against wobbly muscles to push himself upright, panting with effort until he finally had his back against the smooth wooden headboard. Dark globs of hair fell into his eye, sticky with sweat and grease, but he couldn't push it out of the way without falling over. "Hold on there, little one." A woman appeared at his bedside and forced him to lay down again. Her hands wrapped around his, making it obvious how cold his hands were when they warmed immediately under hers. She was a tiny woman, with her brown hair pulled back into two braids that reached all the way down to her waist, and a journeyman's knots on her shoulder.
"You've been sick for a long time. Don't try too hard to move yet until Master Healer McCoy sees you."
It still hurt to speak, so Tony only nodded. Blue eyes latched onto his hands where she held them. They were laced with angry red scars, some so tiny they looked like freckles against his dark skin, but they didn't hurt anymore. Determined to speak, he swallowed some of the pain in his throat and squeezed her fingers.
"A long time?"
"2 weeks."
Master Healer McCoy poked his head sideways through the door, smiling widely before easing his large frame inside. Paper and old hides shifted and rustled as he tried to keep from losing his grip without damaging the delicate things. Tony smiled for him, just because it was the Master Healer. He was one of the few people who didn't mind a little boy underfoot at the gatherings of masters, and he always seemed to have a treat in his pocket.
"You were very sick. Do you feel better?"
Tony nodded, looking back to the journeyman healer.
She was watching him with a tight expression, like he might start screaming. That wasn't fair. He hadn't screamed when his hands had been hurt. Why would he scream now? His voice sounded like a wary croak, so he tried again. I heard voices. When I was sick? Amneth? Is she a healer? She'd been nice, he remembered a little wistfully, and her voice had been very pretty. The two adults shared a look, the one adults always wore when he said something he wasn't supposed to. His father had that face on almost all the time around him, even when he didn't say anything at all. It didn't always mean he was going to be in trouble, though, so Tony bit his lip and didn't turn away. Someone moved in the shadowy doorway behind the healer. Let me talk to him, McCoy. McCoy frowned as he turned, and if Tony hadn't seen him smile before, it would have been scary. Maria, he just woke up. You can speak with him. I'll speak to him now. This is weird business. A tall woman with short cropped dark hair stepped inside, helmet tucked away under her arm. Dark leather scraped the stone doorway as she leaned her hip against it, arms crossed. One glance at her shoulder knots told Tony all he needed to know. This was the Fort Weir Weir woman. I won't wear your patient out. The healer huffed, but nodded to his helper. She scuttled from the room like a tunnel snake when the glow basket's been opened. McCoy set the hides and papers down on the table before he followed her. Dark brown eyes rolled over him, then around the rest of the room. Tony frowned, not liking the way that she looked at him, like even being in the same room was a waste of time. It made his back go stiff, even though he ached all over. His father could look at him like that, but no one else should. Tony coughed to get her attention, then again when the first made his lungs spasm. You wanted to talk to me, Weir Woman? Her eyes fixed on him again, eyebrows arched in faint surprise. At least she wasn't ignoring him anymore. Not really. Someone else does. Suspicion made Tony frown. You're the only one here.
No, she's not.
The Weir Woman didn't even blink at the voice, but Tony was glad he was already in bed or he might have fallen.
My name is Lashida. You can hear me?
Every muscle locked tight as Tony froze in terror. His father hated dragon riders. He said that there had to be another way to fight Thread, one that didn't mean supporting the Weirs. And everyone knew that if someone could hear dragons, they took them away to become a rider candidate. It took everything he had not to think anything. Maria waited, but after a minute, frown lines appeared between her brows.
Tony, you can hear me, can't you?
The dragon was a girl again, a queen, and her voice was sweet the same way her rider's was hard.
Why won't you speak to me? Don't you like me?
Pillows folded around him as he sank backwards, too tired to stay up anymore.
Don't tell them I can hear you, please.
He could feel Lashidith sigh, like a breeze inside his head.
Why? I don't want to be a rider.
Boots clicked against stone, and Tony blinked. He hadn't realized his eyes had closed, and now they were almost too heavy to hold open. Maria was standing up straight now, and her frown had grown deep. Go away if you're not going to talk, he ordered sleepily. The Weir Woman glared at him, then turned on her heel and stalked out without another word.
Your secret is safe,
Lashidith whispered, as the healer bustled back in, looking just a little smug.
But if you need us, we'll listen for your call.
Chapter 2. Dragon Impressions. Tony walked solidly beside his mother, letting her lean on him as she bounced from foot to foot on the hot sands. On her other side, his father was deep in discussion with Master Weaver Dine. They'd been fortunate enough that their boots had thick soles, but her slippers were much too thin. Luckily, a place had been set aside for them that would let her keep her feet cool. The Fort Weir hatching cavern was gigantic, big enough for three broody queens to nest in without risking territorial sniping, and so high overhead that the ceiling vanished into shadow. It needed to be to hold all the dragons. Next to them, the hundreds of human guests barely took up any room at all. They perched in the heights, every color collected together, rows upon rows of them. Even with their riders filling the seats below, the human audience was small indeed. With the heights filled by an entire weir, the effect was awe-inspiring. Deep, rich humming filled the hall as the dragons welcomed the hatchlings. It carried up to the ceiling and echoed back, creating harmonies that would make a harper jealous. Though the sound wasn't loud, it penetrated, soaking every thought, every body, and every heart, in a sense of welcome. Tony was glad they'd been invited to the hatching, even if it meant delaying his traveling plans. He could set off for his journeyman trip later, but an invitation to a hatching only came once in a lifetime. He didn't even mind the occasional nudge at his thoughts as the dragons said their hellos. In the turns since he'd been ill, they'd never told his secret. Now that he was 17, he was too old to stand for a candidate. In a few turns, he wouldn't even have to keep it to himself anymore. More importantly, this was Lashidith's clutch, and she'd always been nice whenever the Fort Weir leaders visited his father. She would have been upset if he turned down the invitation. Being rude to a dragon shouldn't have been high on Tony's list of worries, but it was only for a few hours. What could happen? His mother lifted her brand new dress up to her knees and nearly scrambled up the platform steps to the chairs that had been set up for the high-ranked visitors and their families. Her giggle was like the dragon song. It lifted his spirits, even when his father frowned at them. "Stop being so sour," she chided, smacking his knee playfully as they sat. "This is a happy occasion." The Master Smith's smile was grudging, but he laid his hand on hers. Tony shifted uncomfortably, irrationally disturbed by his parents' casual affection. He turned his attention away from them to the sands. Fortunately, there were plenty of other things to focus on.
"Tony! Tony, they're hatching and Maria isn't here yet, and they're hatching!"
Lashidith wailed in his head from where she crouched over the queen egg of the clutch, hissing at the crowd. Her eyes whirled bright red. If he hadn't known better, he would have thought her threatening, but her voice was too much like Master Dine's daughter after she had too many cakes.
"I want Maria!"
A pretty girl with short-cut blonde hair caught his eye as she came up the steps. He winked at her, just to see her blush, but half of his attention stayed on the sands.
"She's coming. You know she's coming. The eggs haven't even cracked yet."
The queen dragon snorted in his direction, but before she could make her thoughts known, the werewoman rushed in, high-stepping across the sands despite her thick boots. Lashidith stretched her neck out and crooned urgently while Maria took her place at the queen's shoulder.
"I told you so."
Lashidith sent a snort of derision in his direction, mantling her wings over the all-important queen egg.
"Beast," his father murmured, low enough not to scandalize the others around them. "There must be some better way to fight Thread than this irrational reliance on animals."
"If there were, the ancients would have found it," his mother said, saving Tony from having to say it himself. It was an old argument,
and definitely not one Tony wanted to have at a hatching. His mother could say things to his father that he'd never get away with. "You just don't like anything that can't be mechanized," she went on, patting her husband's leg. "Didn't I tell you to stop being so sour?" Like a falling stone reversing course, the master smith smiled. "That you did, and I will take your advice to heart." "Good, because
they're hatching!
The roar of hundreds of dragons shouting in unison sent a sharp jab through Tony's head. His vision blurred and darkened, threatening to make him pass out before he managed to close off his thoughts from all but a few. By the time he had, the first handful of eggs had cracked, and crying dragonettes were waddling around the sands, looking expectantly around at the candidates.
"Tony, Tony, 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 Tony!"
The sheathous voice sliced through the walls Tony had thrown up like they were nothing at all. How did someone like Maria have a dragon so perky?
"She's hatching! I've never had a queen before and now she's hatching! What do I do?"
"I don't know. What does Maria say?"
Tony rubbed his temple, glancing sidelong at his parents. Neither one of them had noticed his lack of focus, but Master Dine's daughter was giving him a suspicious stare from the next row over. He flashed her a smile and was relieved when she tilted her nose in the air and turned her attention to the eggs.
"Maria says..."
The Sheedith's tone dipped, becoming sheepish.
"Maria said to stop acting like a silly wary and settle down."
"Then do that. See, she already has her head out."
The little queen had poked her head out of the egg, but she seemed more interested in bouncing excitedly and looking around than in breaking the rest of her shell. The rocking cracked the egg a bit, but not nearly enough to free her. Tony felt a little sorry for the collection of girls waiting. Whoever impressed the newest gold was obviously going to have her hands full. Eventually, the newly hatched queen realized that she could look around easier out of the shell and set about breaking the rest of it. First, her tail broke through, which widened a crack in the back enough for her wings to rise up. After that, all it took was another impatient bounce for the rest of the shell to shatter. The Sheedith crooned and nudged her daughter towards the waiting girls. The little gold snorted and stumbled forward, still glistening from being trapped in her egg. There were 6 girls, all pretty enough from what Tony could see, though distance kept him from making any judgments. One by one, the little queen inspected the candidates, going down the line until there was only one girl left, a tiny redhead who stepped forward uncertainly. Lashidith's daughter lifted her head, eyes whirling orange with distress as she looked the last candidate up and down slowly. Then she knocked her over. The girl's surprised gasp was too loud in the cavern. Tony broke himself out of his daze to realize that there weren't any other eggs left. The queen was the last one, and she just refused her last candidate. Tony had never heard of anything like it. The dragons always chose the right people on search, and there were plenty to choose from. Even as he watched, the new queen plopped down on the sands with a definite attitude of sulking. Her head rose until her nose was nearly pointed straight up, eyes whirling as she glared at the dragons perched overhead. Maria and the Weirleader, Fury, were consulting off to the side, neither looking happy as they gestured emphatically at the sulking dragon. Finally, Fury turned to the stands.
"This is an unusual circumstance," he bellowed, the acoustics of the cavern helping his voice carry. "Would all available young women between the ages of 15 and 20 turns come down to the sands?"
Tony's dazed horror increased as a double handful of girls made their way down to the sands to stand in front of the obstinate little gold. She didn't even bother to knock them down.
Her head stayed rolled back as she pointedly ignored everyone. The murmur of worry from the crowd grew softer as each girl passed, until a total hush fell with the snubbing of the last one. Even Lashidith's usual babble was silent, along with the other dragons he'd been unable to shut out entirely. In the quiet, Tony couldn't miss the deep, heart-rending loneliness coming from the hatchling. It was wordless, but it filled his head like an echo. He'd never felt that sort of despair from a dragon before.
"It's okay. Just pick someone, and you won't be alone anymore."
The queen's head whipped around so quickly that he almost thought she'd hurt herself. A rock settled in Tony's stomach as she stared in his direction, head lowered intently. She picked herself up off the sand and rolled her shoulders before stalking past the gathered women towards the stands. Despair was gone, replaced with a deep-seated determination that Tony recognized too well.
"No. No.
The girls are that way. Behind you."
She ignored him and continued her approach, too focused on him for his comfort. The Master Smith's only son looked at the advancing hatchling, then around at the complete lack of suitable girls nearby, and did what any rational person would do. He ran. Slim hands caught his arm as he made for the exit. Tony looked down into his mother's worried eyes and said something as he shook her off. He thought it might be reassuring, but it could have been anything. He wasn't thinking. Just acting on instinct, and every instinct said one thing. He had to get away before the queen caught him. A jump took him down to the sands, and after that he had a clean shot at the entrance to the lower caverns. He made it exactly 3 steps before something heavy slammed into the small of his back. Sand burned his hands as he caught himself, but before he could save himself from a scalding, a blow against his ribs rolled him onto his back. The weight settled onto his chest and looked down at him with cheerful blue eyes.
"I'm Marith, and you're Tony, and Tony is mine."
The Queen Dragonette nuzzled his chest, crooning sweetly. Warmth blossomed in his chest as Marith rested her chin against it. He could feel her burrowing into his heart like something physical, a piece of metal that edged deeper with every beat. It hurt, like being pulled open so that old wounds he'd almost forgotten could have a chance to heal. A release of pressure, but not a wanted one. He didn't want to be a dragon rider in fly thread. All Tony had ever wanted was to be a smith. Pain like this shouldn't have felt good.
"You're supposed to pick a girl."
At odds with his words, he reached up to rub her cheek. It was softer than suede, and faintly speckled with the sand she'd kicked up while running after him.
"Queens don't impress boys." "I don't want a girl."
Marith settled more firmly over him, snuggling in as her golden wings spread along the sand to either side.
"I want you."
People were starting to gather around them, some openly staring. Weirleader Fury looked ready to live up to his name. Maria looked even worse. Burning hot sand cushioned Tony's head as he dropped it back with a thump. They were going to be in so much trouble. If there was one thing Tony always prided himself on, it was that he was seldom caught by surprise. He could usually tell beforehand when his father would be in a bad mood, or when the dragons would miss more thread than usual and he'd have to help out with the ground crews. It wasn't a science, but he was good at it. It wasn't often that he was wrong. Just this once, he would have liked to be.
"Listen, son."
Fury was an intimidating man at best, with his craggy face and thread scars. He might have been relatively young, maybe 30 turns, but the gray in his hair and the eye patch made him look ancient for a rider. Looming made him even more menacing, and he loomed like a master. You know how it is. Men don't ride queen dragons. They just don't. Tell her to pick someone else. Merith was sound asleep with her head on Tony's thighs. Her stomach bulged with all the meat he'd shoved down her while everyone had been busy yelling at each other. Even shifting a little made her sigh and snuggle closer, so Tony could only sit there and let the Weirleader tower over him. When she'd been awake, he'd been locked in a sort of haze. Merith wanted him, and whatever Merith wanted, she got. She'd also wanted food, lots of it, and by the time he was done feeding her, his gather clothes had been ruined, and he'd been bloody to the elbows. That hadn't mattered either. But now, the stone couch was digging into his tailbone, his leg had gone numb, and he still hadn't had a chance to bathe. The Mastersmith had already let him know what kind of a disappointment he was. His mother had just looked sad when she'd kissed him goodbye. Every dragon in the Weir, all 300-plus of them, had popped into his head to congratulate him. And now he was being yelled at. Tony had had enough. I won't tell her a sharding thing. She's mine, or I'm hers. Something like that. He really didn't want to try and think about it too much, or all the reasons he had for avoiding becoming a rider would come back. If Merith found out, it would break her heart. Fury's one eye narrowed in annoyance.
You listen to me, you little... No, you listen.
Tony's own audacity caught him by surprise, but Fury just lifted his eyebrows. Merith sighed under his hand, and Tony pressed on before he could lose his nerve. I didn't mean for this to happen, but she didn't want anyone else. What happens to dragons that don't impress? For the first time, the Weirleader looked uncomfortable, crossing his arms and looking away.
It doesn't happen often.
5 different dragons had already offered an answer, though, and it made Tony feel sick to his stomach. They die, don't they? They just sit there and starve because they won't eat without a rider.
We try to help them.
Fury's glare could have melted rock. You'd rather have her die than with me. The dragon in his lap gave a slippy grumble, and Tony reined in his thoughts quickly. He might have only been a rider for a few hours, but he knew trouble when he almost fell into it. I'm not giving her up. Sensing a lost cause, Fury frowned and pounced on something else.
You said you didn't mean to, and everyone saw you take that dive for the caverns. Why'd she pick you? Queens don't pick men. Ever.
Tony flushed. If he hadn't been pinned at the legs, he might have made a break for it. With Merith in his lap, he couldn't even squirm properly. What does it matter, he suddenly realized. I'm already a rider.
My rider.
Merith's voice was a murmur of thought, soft and slurred with sleep. Her topmost lid cracked so she could peer up at him, but the warm weight of food in her stomach was too much, and it slid back closed after only a moment.
My Tony.
Kid. Hey, kid.
Tony blinked and lifted his head, realizing a few seconds too late that he'd been smiling like a complete imbecile. Fury was still glaring, but something about the set of his shoulders had softened.
It takes you like that sometimes, the Weirleader admitted. You still ain't answered me.
They couldn't do anything to him. That was a miraculous sort of thought. He'd already lost whatever little bit of his father's respect he might have had. Dragon riders couldn't hold real rank in a craft, so he'd never be a master, much less succeed his father. And, most importantly, in spite of Fury's ranting, Tony was almost positive that they couldn't take Merith away. When he tried to look at how deep she went, he couldn't find any place she hadn't been. She was everywhere, filling him up in every way. If the Weirleader could have taken her and given her to someone else, he already would have.
For the first time in Tony's life, he didn't have anything he could lose. Tony straightened his shoulders and looked the Weir Leader in the eye, trying to muster every bit of the imperious air he'd ever seen his father put on. His blood-stained blue tunic ruined the effect, but he gave it his best anyway. I talked to dragons. Fury's teeth ground, rolling together as if he were grinding something between them. What did you say, boy? His voice could have frozen the sands of the hatching ground. I talked to dragons, Tony repeated, a little defiantly. Ask Kinkth if you don't. Or wait, I will. The bronze dragon had already picked up his request and was laughing loud enough that it made Tony's head hurt. Fury's face went pale, then started to redden until it was an unhealthy shade of purple. And when, he asked slowly, were you going to tell us about this little trick of yours? When I felt like it. That had been the wrong thing to say. Fury's flesh faded, but his voice sharpened into something like a whip. Yeah, well, now you're my rider, and I ain't gonna take no crap, you hear me? The Weir Leader barked. And no one keeps that kind of secret from me. Next time you have something important, by the first egg, you sharding well tell me, you got that? When Tony nodded warily, he snorted. Good enough. Make sure she's oiled, then get your ass out there to the party and explain to the Lord Holders how and tween you managed to land her. Hear me, Ryder? Yes, sir. Tony's tone must have just barely passed muster, because Fury just nodded and turned on his heel to stalk out of the weir. Merith stirred again, shifting just enough that the blood rushed back into Tony's foot with excruciating prickles. Air hissed between his teeth as he fought not to squirm and wake her. He didn't want to go to the party and mix with the queen candidates or anyone else who'd failed to impress, but it had been in order. They might not be able to take anything from him, but Tony was pretty sure Fury could make his life miserable if he wanted to. Maybe there'd be a good bend in white there, or at least one of the better Tillic brews.
Chapter 3. Dragon Choices.
Absolutely not.
Fury scowled at Tony, who just inspected his goblet of wine. Over the turns, he developed a sort of immunity to Fury's glares out of pure self-defense.
Who said you get any say in it? I'm not going to be an actor in your little play.
The answer is no. He and Fury were the only ones in the meeting room, which saved Tony the problem of fending off the other queen writers. He might have technically been one of them, but he drew the line at girlish bonding. His hair did not need cutting, gossip wasn't of interest, and he was barred from assisting in the lower caverns. That, as far as Tony was concerned, was that. The only one who seemed to have any respect for him was Maria, and he was pretty sure she only pretended she did because her dragon liked him.
The Weir needs a leader it can count on, and you're going to help me do that whether you like it or not.
Fury's single eye was alight with determination as he rose to his feet. It had worked as an intimidation tactic when Tony had been a scrawny, still-growing teenager, but 10 years working with him had taken off the edge. Camerith will be the one to fly for the next Weir Woman. He's the best dragon Venden has. There's no possible way you could object to Steve as Weir Leader. No. Not to mention that Tony had been very careful to keep Merith away from Benden when she was close to mating, for 5 turns and counting. He wasn't about to ruin a good friendship because Fury was being a controlling prick. If he squinted, Tony could almost see new gray appear in the Weir Leader's hair, one strand at a time. Adding to it was one of his favorite pastimes. Fury wasn't about to give up his plan that easily. He leaned over the table, shoulders tense with anger. I thought you and Steve were friends.
I like Camerith,
Merith admitted cheerfully from where she was sitting on the ledge of the weir.
He's pretty and very big.
Her tone made it clear exactly what part of the bronze dragon she was referring to.
You're not helping.
Which is exactly why I'm saying no. He's with Master Guardsman Sharon, and I'm not going to mess with that. Tony leaned back in his chair and propped his boots on the table. What's this about anyways? I know you've been trying to get rid of me for turns, but Bendon Weirwoman? That reeks of more desperation than usual. There was a long moment when Tony could have sworn he heard one of Fury's molars crack. He definitely looked like he was grinding his teeth, lips drawn back into an ugly snarl. "Do you know," he began, leaning over the conference table menacingly, "who's most likely to rise to mate next over at Bendon? Poth. And you know who's caught her the last 3 times? Lygeth." Surprise kept the name from sinking in right away, but when it did, Tony's boot slapped down on the floor. "Lygeth is a blue. Hank's blue. Watch weirs are just like small ugly dragon, Hank's blue. How is that even possible?" "Shards if I know, but I'll let the thread have us all before I let some jumped-up blue rider become weir leader." Fury jabbed a finger at Tony. "Merith's the only gold I got who might rise before Poth. You're going to Bendon."
Hank would possibly be only a little better than no weir leader at all. Tony liked him well enough, but the man was definitely not made for that sort of stress. "But did you ask Jessica to stay on? Why is she retiring? What kind of bastard do you take me for?" Fury's fingers drummed against the table. "Of course I did. She's pregnant. Wants to focus on the kid, and she don't want to try doing that, flying fall and being werewoman." Well, that explained that. A dragon rider getting pregnant and not miscarrying was rare enough to warrant stepping down from her duties. She wouldn't even be able to go between until after the birth. "So," Tony raised an eyebrow sarcastically, "you think I'd be a better werewoman than Hank would be wereleader?" "I think Steve has got a better chance at keeping you from doing something stupid than Jan does Hank." Leather gloves scraped at the wooden table as Fury's knuckles ground into it in irritation. "Anyway, I had Kinkth ask your oversized green, and she's okay with it." "Merith?"
"What?" she asked lightly, without a shred of guilt.
"You like Steve, and Fury's right. You should listen to him."
Tony felt ganged up on, but he had to admit they had a point. Not that he liked it, but he was honest enough to admit to it. He knocked back the rest of his wine, barely even tasting it before he slammed the goblet to the table and stood. "I hate you so much." "It's mutual." Fury's glare didn't change at all, but Tony could hear the smugness oozing in his voice. "Now go pack your damn metal suit. I want you at Bendon before the sun goes down." Bendon Weir was strange. It was almost as old as Fort, so the walls and floors were worn smooth from centuries of use, its doorways cut into solid stone with the precision the ancients were known for. And that much, it was like home, but Tony didn't recognize any of the faces in the lower caverns, and no one could tell him where to put the smithing tools that he'd brought along other than in one of the storage caverns. He'd been at Fort for 10 turns. It had taken him most of that time to set up a decent smithy and workshop, and starting from scratch again wasn't an idea he liked at all. His flight armor at least had a stand, so he could keep it in his weir. Hundreds of tiny plates of metal, burnished red and gold with a coating to help keep off the rust, and attached to the thinnest leather he could buy. 5 turns since he'd come up with the idea, and Fury had never agreed to have it made for everyone else in the weir, not even just the queen riders. Maybe whoever won the weir leadership at Bendon would be interested in it. Tony hooked the gauntlet into their holders and tried not to think that it might be him. In general, the weir he'd chosen wasn't much. A bathing room, a sleeping chamber, and the stone couch Merith would probably only sleep on in bad weather. Its walls were rougher than most of the weir, where the ancient stone-cutting tools had started to run out,
But time had wore away all but the most dramatic edges. Tony had never felt the need to have more, since the possessions he most cared for were generally in the smithy. Smaller was better, as far as he was concerned. It would give him more leverage when he started bargaining for his workshop if he'd picked a modest living space.
Tony!
Camerith's steep bass tickled the back of Tony's head like a feather. Camerith had a deeper voice than most dragons, so deep it almost tickled. Tony had to fight the urge to scratch the back of his skull every time he heard it.
Why didn't you tell us you're visiting?
The bronze dragon sounded wounded, like Tony had done him some sort of personal injury.
Because I'm not visiting. I'm here to stay. Where's Steve?
Camerith went silent for a heartbeat. Then footsteps sounded just past Tony's door.
Steve is right here. What's this Camerith says about you staying?
The bronze rider strode in without even bothering to knock, his familiar blue riding leathers so well cared for that they barely made any noise at all as he moved.
Did you finally drive Fury over the edge and get yourself banished?
I wish it were that easy. He's playing games, and I get to be his main piece. Tony grinned at his friend, letting his eyes wander down him.
As usual,
Steve didn't notice. There was no disguising the easy, dragonborn grace he moved with, and the frustration of being able to look, but never touch, made Tony grimace.
You could touch if Camerith flew me,
Merith commented, seemingly idly. But the spaded tip of her tail twitched where it poked back into the weir through the entrance to the outside ledge.
Steve would like it very much, and I wouldn't mind sharing you with Steve. Much. You just want to be flown by Camerith,
Tony accused fondly, disguising the conversation by reaching for a wineskin and two goblets. Sometimes he thought he might have impressed a very large green by mistake.
None of the other golds he knew were quite so blatantly sexual.
Well, he is very pretty, and he lets me have the big wearies when we hunt together.
Tony sent her a mental chuckle and turned back to Steve with the goblets. The conversation had only taken a few seconds, but Steve had noticed anyway. Blonde eyebrows raised silently as he accepted his wine. She's just being her usual indulgent self, Tony answered the silent question. She likes Fury's plan.
Which is? Steve asked, swirling his wine, but not tasting it yet.
He looked around the weir, which was already half decorated with Tony's things. What remained was still packed in bags that lay around like multi-hued gems of the weaver's craft. Smithcraft, especially the intricate work Tony liked to do, brought in more than enough extra marks to make a weir comfortable.
Does it have anything to do with Jessica stepping down as weirwoman?
Got it in one. Tony sighed and knocked back half the goblet, ignoring Steve's frown. After arguing with Fury, he needed the fortification it provided. He's trying to stack the deck against Poth taking the position, and Merith's the one he picked. Annoyance sharpened the bronze rider's expression.
Jan would make a perfectly good weirwoman.
And Hank? That brought Steve up short. He grimaced guiltily, glancing at Merith's twitching tail like she tattled on him.
You heard about that, huh?
He didn't bother waiting for an answer, grabbing a chair from beside the small table that came with the weir, and swinging a leg over it to sit backwards. I'm sure Lygeth would be willing to sit out of the flight. Even Hank knows he shouldn't take the spot.
If it were that easy, I wouldn't be here.
Fury probably hates the idea of me as a weirwoman almost as much as he does Hank as a weir leader. Tony shrugged. I'd pay good marks to know how he got Luke to agree to the transfer. He says I don't follow orders.
You don't follow orders.
That's completely beside the point. Tony took the other chair, watching Steve fidget. Since they'd met while providing backup for Ista turns before, he felt like he'd become proficient at reading Steve's body language. The man didn't even try to hide it, which helped, but for Tony, it was mostly just practice.
Watching Steve's body had become a very pleasant hobby. Just then, everything from the set of his shoulders to the way he gripped his cup said that he was upset. What else is going on? How did a blue even catch a gold? Steve finally sipped his wine, looking at the goblet in surprise, as if Tony would ever have offered him an inferior vintage. No one knows. Lygus wasn't even at Benden. He was helping clear mud from the slides in the high reaches about a turn ago. Tony nodded, remembering. There had been earth tremors up and down the whole mountain range. A lot of people had died that spring. She went between to him as soon as she'd finished blooding her kill. Since then, Jan and Hank have been weirmates, and Lygus catches Poth every time. None of the bronzes even try. They just say they don't want to. Has anyone asked Poth? Tony's vision was already blurring as his thoughts darted from dragon to dragon, looking for the familiar mind of Jan's partner. It sounds like she planned it out. With his mind elsewhere, Satif's voice was distant, but Tony could still hear his snort. Dragons don't plan like that.
Tony?
Poth's sweet soprano was surprised, and more than a little preoccupied. Maybe she was eating.
I thought you were at Fort.
You don't know dragons well, do you?
Everyone does. I've been transferred. I have a question for you, sweetheart.
Faintly, he heard Steve mutter that he hated it when Tony did that, but the weir was far behind him.
Ask away, handsome. Ask away. What's going on between you and Lyga? He's mine!
Tony reeled as a shout bounced through his head, setting his ears to ringing. Hans shook his shoulder worriedly, but Tony shrugged them off, clinging to his chair.
I know,
he thought as loudly as he could to get through her anger.
I just want to know why. I'm curious. Oh.
As quickly as the fury had sparked, it was gone, replaced with contrition that made his skull feel like it was stuffed with taffy.
I'm sorry, darling. I didn't mean to yell. People keep saying that he's just a blue, and I should choose a bronze or even a brown. I don't want a bronze or a brown. I want Lygus.
He's a very fine dragon, Tony agreed, and carefully kept his thoughts away from the mess of the weir leadership.
I just like to know why you like him so much.
Poth actually purred.
He's sweet and kind, and he's warm and comfortable, and he gives me worries.
He snapped back to himself, twisting in his seat to look at his dragon. Merith had twisted around so her head lay inside the weir, faceted eyes gently swirling with a happy blue color. She looked as innocent as something with a head the size of his entire body could. Tony? Steve shook a shoulder again, blue eyes worried. They were the same exact shade as Merith's. Knowing his dragon, that was probably deliberate. You talked to Poth? What's wrong? It was only early spring, but with Steve's bulk so close, Tony definitely felt overheated. He drained the rest of his wine. Metal clinked against wood as he dropped the goblet to the table.
I think I need something stronger to drink.
They were 20 turns into a pass, with the red star nearing its closest point to Pern. Thread fell thick and often, with only the extreme cold in the depths of winter to turn the thread to dust and give the weirs respite. Dragons and men were exhausted, with at least a third of the fighters at any given time either injured or on light duty as they recovered. Tony loved it. There was a rush to fighting thread that couldn't be found anywhere else. It was just himself, Merith, and the old enemy up there in the sky. Queens flew low to compensate for their lesser maneuverability, but that didn't take away the thrill.
I still think you look silly in that,
Merith commented, the hot air from her sigh making his latest designs flutter where he'd weighed them down.
You have me. What do you need armor for?
Leather creaked as he adjusted the straps on his helmet. There were places where it was dangerously exposed to thread, but he hadn't figured out how to compensate for that yet.
Maybe small, sliding metal plates?
We've had this conversation before. It's the same reason you need my flamethrower.
Merith growled sulkily at the reminder that she couldn't breathe fire like the other colors.
This way, you don't have to worry that I'll be hit in the throat before you can skip between.
You don't trust me.
I trust you. It's thread I don't trust.
He fixed the last strap and slid the helmet on, snapping the faceplate into place.
Come on, leg up, then we've got to pick up the rest of our gear.
Merith's eyes rolled yellow with a mix of annoyance and awareness of the approaching threadfall, but she lifted her forearm obediently. The red-dyed harness straps groaned but held as Tony climbed to the spot between her last two neck ridges, just in front of her shoulders. The armor was as light as he could make it, but it still added a good 40 pounds to his weight. Still, it had saved his life, or at least limbs, often enough that he wouldn't fight without it. Maybe if he made a good enough show of it, whoever was Weirleader of Benden next would agree to let him at least outfit the other queen riders with it. He must have been louder than he'd thought, because Merith turned her head to give him a distinctly cheeky look.
Steve would let you outfit the whole Weir if you asked, and maybe smiled a little. You know better than that.
Metal and leather fumbled under his gauntleted hands as he strapped himself in.
You're really too happy about this whole thing. One of us needs to be.
Her wings snapped open as she took the lazy dragon's route and tipped off the edge of her ledge, gliding down towards the Weir Bowl. The other three queens had already gathered. Less Jessica's Lejuth, but that was expected with her condition.
Tony!
All three of the queens cried at once, making him glad his faceplate hid his wince. Popularity wasn't as fun as he used to think.
What are you wearing?
The smallest gold, Werth asked, craning her neck around. She was a dusky color, nearly as dark as a bronze, but there was no denying the shining undertones to her hide.
Don't you trust Merith to skip? I told you so,
his own dragon said smugly. Tony caught the flamethrower cylinders as they were tossed up to him by weirlings, buckling the extras to his harness. He'd forgotten that the only one he'd flown with in this group was Jan and Poth. He didn't even know the names of the other two riders. It felt strange, dealing with unknown riders. He'd been at Fort for so long that he'd gotten used to flying with Maria and the others. Tony wasn't looking forward to learning how they flew.
It keeps me pretty, ladies. Don't you think thread scores take away something?
I think some scoring makes a male look distinguished,
Poth commented, not even bothering to hide the way she kept her eye on the blue dragons at the far end of the bowl.
Sepedith doesn't have any scars, and I like him that way,
someone else said, turning her head to practically nuzzle Tony out of his seat. Up on her neck, her rider raised her hand in greeting, obviously trying not to laugh.
I'm Hespianth. My rider's MJ. She says hi and that she likes your metal suit. You're really a male?
Sometimes, Tony had to fight the urge to check his masculinity. Gossiping with dragons wasn't all that different from trading beauty secrets with their riders.
Good to meet you both. I'm pretty sure I'm male on most days. Don't we have thread to fly? Luke will call signal soon.
Poth bumped Hespianth with her wing.
Do give the male air, won't you, dear? He's already crowded enough by that metal thing of his.
Hespianth mantled her wings and arched her neck, eyes deepening to orange anger. Before the inevitable bickering could start, the Weirleader's wing lifted off the ground.
His bronze, Gaith,
trumpeted, and suddenly the air was full of dragons darting into formation. Old hands that they were, Marith and Poth didn't so much as twitch, but Hespianth gave an awkward hop as if she wanted to take wing, and Wirth tossed her head. Tony took a minute to double-check his replacement cylinders and flamethrower nozzle while the others took their positions.
Only after the rest of the weir was up did the queens take wing, settling into place low on the front of the formation. The roar was enormous. 200 pairs of wings, beating in close proximity inside the walls of the weir bowl. The bowl of Benden itself spread out below, the long dead volcano that formed it peppered with the rock ledges that marked dragon weirs. Weirfolk urged herd beasts into the safety of stone enclosures, while weirlings sorted out the firestone stacks that the other colors would need for the fight. In the center, the lake gleamed in the sun, waves churning as the latest batch of hatchlings were collected up by their riders. It was peaceful, until he lifted his face to see the looming presence of the red star overhead. He could feel every dragon hold its breath as Luke's fist rose like a vacuum inside his head. Tony gripped his straps so tightly that his gauntlets creaked and tried to focus on their destination. The crags of the Bendenhold, scorched bare of greenery. Farther out, the orchards, and even farther, the herd beast shelters. It was a distraction, though not much of one. As much as he loved fighting Thread, he hated this part. The fist fell. As one, every fighting dragon winked between. Instantly, the silence turned as real outside as in, as the world vanished. Icy cold penetrated through even his armor. It was the only thing he could feel at all. Marith's wing beats behind him were gone. Even his own heartbeat was silenced in his chest. He tasted bile as the too familiar sensation of vertigo spun his head around. Every rider knew what happened if they were trapped between for too long. They didn't come back.
"I'm here," Marith promised, a whisper in his head. "We're here together."
At least it was something. Three coughs and an eternity later, the world returned in blazing color. Tony felt his heartbeat again and almost sagged into his flight straps. Frost flaked off his armor and melted in the cold spring sunshine. Bendenhold spread out below him, just as he'd imagined. The bare tree limbs were touched with green as buds just started to form, and the ground was dark and barren. High, fluffy clouds scuttled across the pale sky. It would have been a perfect day for casual flying, if not for the silver smear of Thread on the eastern horizon. He tried not to think about how one missed Thread would wither the whole orchard and ruin the field beyond it. That's what the ground crews were for. Marith's place at the back of the four-dragon formation gave her plenty of room to maneuver. Tony guided Marith to settle high on Worth's right side, where he'd be in place to cover her haunches if Thread got through. It also let Marith ride the updraft caused by her passage, which helped compensate for the extra 40 pounds of armor. He could feel her exasperation with his worry. Needless, in Marith's opinion. But she still took the position without a fuss.
"I know what I'm doing,"
Marith reminded him, backwinging slightly to stay in her position.
"I've done this before, you know." "I know, love. Is everyone flying well?"
It was a check he'd gotten used to performing, at Fury's request. It was amazing how many dragons would try to keep in the air when they were less than at their best. Marith was quick to tell Tony how she was doing, but others weren't so open with their own riders. The riders were just as bad about themselves, but their dragons would take care of that. No one tattled as fast as a dragon with an ill rider. Affirmatives came from every dragon, with Luke Scaith adding that his rider appreciated the check.
"We are well,"
Camrith chimed in cheerfully from his place at the head of his wing.
"It is a fine day for fighting,
and Steve thinks your armor looks very useful. You've added to it, and now it doesn't look like a scrap heap.
The bronze's voice paused. Then a feeling of acute embarrassment washed through Tony's head.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to relay that last part.
The faceplate of the armor kept Tony from laughing too obviously.
I'll pretend you didn't. Thank you. Oh, thread!
The first flame appeared from the upper levels, and there was no time for talking anymore. Even with 10 wings of dragons between the thread and them, there was plenty of mopping up for the queens to do. Poth darted easily after the clumps that escaped the upper levels, but MJ's Hespianth hesitated before diving, so her rider could see her the thread. She was too young to have developed the reflexes she needed yet, but it would come. Worth was as smooth as Poth in chasing after thread. Tony gripped his flamethrower and leaned into Merith's neck as they rose, reaching out to her mind with his own. And then they flew. It was like sex, like impression, like falling in love. All the best things in the world. Tony and Merith twisted and wrapped around each other's mind until there was only one shared between them. Their wing beats were strong, cupping the air as they darted and twisted to catch even the smallest filaments, the flamethrower charring them to black ash. Below, ground crews with flamethrowers took care of the few threads that escaped the dragons. Tiny figures with tinier bursts of flame even at low altitude. Soot stained their armor and hide, smearing greasily every place they touched. Other dragons were background noise, with their calls and shouts and screams as thread occasionally met its mark. Humans were even less than that, a breath of sound and ears that were wholly given over elsewhere. A line of thread dropped from overhead, skimming over the back of their metal-clad hands harmlessly, before scoring a line of fire over their shoulder. They squealed in pain, instinct flicking them between. Combined as they were, there wasn't any cold to feel, but the Tony part went still, all too aware of the void on all sides. The thread froze and crumbled away into the darkness. Not soon enough, between flickered away, and they were back in the fight again. When the fall was finally over, Tony didn't quite realize it until Merith's mind gently nudged him. Untangling himself from her felt like peeling off wet warehide, uncomfortable and a little bit clingy. But eventually, he was able to blink without seeing the world fractured by dragon eyes. Coming back to himself was always strange. He couldn't shake the sensation that he was missing a tail. Muscles he'd somehow forgotten about ached. They'd have just enough time for wounds to heal before the next fall. The first thing he did was check those around him. The queen's wing was intact, but every dragon he touched radiated profound grief.
Who did we lose?
Merith replied slowly, sounding as worn out as he felt.
Only two deaths. Trefaleth and Wreath.
The surge of relief, not anyone I know, was immediately followed by guilt. Deaths weren't uncommon when fall was thick and coming every few days, but that wasn't an adequate excuse. He didn't have to ask if Merith felt the same. The wand of the flamethrower clicked back into its holder as Tony relaxed into the fighting straps.
Take us back to the Weir.
Exhaustion dragged at him so deeply that he couldn't even work up his usual fear of between.
Home,
she corrected, just before they flickered between. Everyone but Tony had a thread score of some type, but that was normal. His armor usually kept him safe enough, and even he was laced with scars here and there. Steve had gotten a nasty score on his shoulder, but the total of injuries was only 30 pairs grounded from the next flight. With that and only two deaths, it had been an unusually clean fall. Tony tried to keep that in mind as he urged Marith to eat. Deaths affected the entire weir, and with fall coming every few 7 days, it felt like they were always mourning someone.
Just one. You flew hard. You deserve it.
She rested her chin against the bluish grass, looking up at him pitifully.
I'm not hungry,
she insisted, even though he could feel the hunger gnawing at her. The waters of the lake splashed up the shore, trailing along the edge of one limp wing. The thread score on her shoulder was covered by numweeb salve, the paler green of it not quite masking the faint ooze of dark green ichor. Just beyond the lake, a wild herd was foraging for itself, well aware of the predator on the other side, but not yet panicked. He'd hoped that wild game might tempt her better than the beast kept at the weir. It wouldn't hurt her to go hungry for a few days, but Tony had never been able to stop worrying when it happened. Every dragon in the weir would forget soon enough, but the interim was painful.
Thank Farinth for draconic short memory. I heard that.
Marith glared at him, then curled into herself a bit tighter.
I don't want to forget them. They were our weir mates, and we barely knew them, but I don't want to forget.
If she remembered every dragon that died in fall, she'd never eat. This time, Tony remembered not to think that thought too loudly. He rubbed a hand over her cheek.
I'll remember for both of us.
In spite of her annoyance, the gold leaned into his hand, hide warm and soft under his palm.
You always do.
Her color was deepening and growing more luminescent every day, a sure sign of impending fertility. Poth wasn't nearly as dark as Marith yet. Tony hoped he had at least enough time to find a stand-in for the flight. There was an off chance that Camrith wouldn't catch her, but Tony wasn't going to take that risk. Dragonborn passion could make up for a lot when the flight was on, but it would never help with waking next to someone you'd never been interested in on your own. Tony had found that out too many times already. Explanations didn't help. Marith would never understand.
Eat for Camrith,
he tried, careful to keep his mental tone light.
If you're weak from hunger, someone else might catch you, or the flight will be short.
Deep, speculative interest tinted Marith's emotions.
I hadn't thought of that, she admitted. Do you think it will be a long flight?
Very long, Tony promised, lying almost blatantly. Dragon mating was as varied as human. There was never any telling how it would turn out until the actual event.
But only if you're strong. Well,
less tempted where actual physical needs didn't. Tony wasn't sure how much of that was a reflection of him, or if he was a reflection of her. It was two mirrors, with their reflections stretching on into infinity.
Maybe one. And I'll call Camrith to share.
Don't.
Too late.
Pure, cheerful wickedness laced her tone, but she relaxed and lifted her wings to the green-hued late afternoon sky.
You'll keep Steve company while we hunt, won't you? Of course you will. And there they are.
The bronze appeared in the air, dangerously low over them, clutching his rider carefully in his front claws. He didn't even land before depositing Steve on the lakeshore roughly enough that he fell on his rump.
Thank you for inviting us.
Marith gave a happy squeal and took to the air, raising a stiff breeze that left the humans covered in a fine layer of dust. Together, the two dragons soared up to a suitable hunting altitude.
I want a big one.
Yes, thank you, Steve muttered, rolling his eyes up at Tony ruefully. He was dressed in only a fresh pair of flying pants, and his blonde hair was still damp from a bath. As a consequence, the dirt had turned him gray from head to toe. Bandages covered his injured shoulder, the pale smear of numbweed peeking out from under them against his tanned skin.
Was that your idea, or did she do it?
Guess.
Tony scrubbed some of the grit from his hair. He wasn't nearly as covered as Steve, but by the time he got back to the weir, it would be caked on him. The lake was temptingly convenient, but no. Ideas that good always had a way of turning out badly. She's better at ignoring me than Fury on a bad day. Steve didn't seem to have any of the same compunctions Tony did. He started working off his boots in what, to Tony, seemed like an obvious prelude to nudity. At least there's the lake. By the time they're done, we might even be dry. Tony felt several dragons short of a wing.
Lake?
He repeated slowly, rolling the word on his tongue as if it were unfamiliar. As in swim? That lake? Do you see any other way to clean up? Steve lifted an eyebrow that was crusted with dirt. It's not that bad. Tony, you're gray. Steve stood and bent over to shake his head. A fine sifting of dust surrounded him. And so am I. It's not that cold. He grinned through it like it was an old joke and reached for his belt. Tony reached for his wineskin, but found that he hadn't brought one. Clearly, that was a grave oversight. This was either a nightmare or a daydream. The trouble was that they tended to become the same thing after a while. Say that again after your dragon has to fish a rider-shaped ice chunk out of the water. I'm sure Master Guardsman Sharon will appreciate having to thaw out her lover. We're not lovers. Steve stripped off his leather flying pants as easily as if he hadn't just broken all of Tony's preconceptions, including the one that he might have darker body hair. He shook the trousers, snapping them sharply to loosen the dirt. She has a whole garrison to manage, and I have Camereth. It never works out for long in any case.
I could have told you that,
Camereth butted into Tony's head.
If you'd asked me.
The world briefly overlaid itself with the vision of his own Mareth bent over a herd's beast, gorging herself. Then his usual sight snapped back into place, leaving only the faint feeling that he should be able to see behind himself.
It's rude to ask a dragon about their rider, he reminded the bronze.
Steve had spread his trousers over a bush and was testing the water. No matter what Tony tried, his eyes kept sliding along smooth, tanned skin that did not vanish into the water quickly enough. I thought Camereth liked Sharon.
I like you more.
You're not helping. He does. We just work better as friends. Steve was visibly shivering, ripples going up and down his skin. It didn't stop him from wading deeper. The water was clear enough that it didn't do much more than blur details. In spite of the cool spring breeze coming off the mountains, Tony found himself sweating. Self-restraint was not something he'd ever practiced. Are you going to rinse off or not?
You should,
Mareth butted in. He could still feel her eating. Camereth had given her a young bullock.
Or I'll pick you up and drop you into the water, and you'll have to go between in wet clothes, and then you'll catch a cold, and Steve will have to mate with you while you're all sniffly.
Tony rested his face in his hands and hoped Steve would be too preoccupied to notice. With any other dragon, he might have risked calling their bluff, but he knew Mareth would do it.
You're lucky I love you.
I love you too. Now, be a good rider and get undressed for the nice man.
The casual nudity of the weir had never been a problem for Tony before, but as he pulled off his tunic, he was too aware of Steve's eyes on him. Even worse was the happy hum of both dragons in the back of his head. They were perfectly fine with his discomfort. At least the water was going to be cold. He needed it. Hunger pains so sharp they felt like a fresh wound woke Tony from a sound sleep 3 days after fall. He sat up in bed sharply, gasping and clutching his stomach. Pure, incandescent need clawed at him from the inside out. He knew these feelings. They'd done this before, but he hadn't expected it so soon. Marith should have been good for at least another 7 days. He hadn't even had time to find a stand-in yet. Of course, it was nearly midnight when Marith woke up, starving and craving far more interesting things than just meat. Tony had always been a nighttime person. His dragon was no different. What it meant, however, was that half the weir was asleep. Not even a mating queen was enough to drag some of the bronzes from their couches. Tony scrambled from his bed, dashing for the hallway without bothering to do more than throw on a robe as he ran. Marith would be in no mood to fly him down to the feeding grounds, and he had to be there. Queens had been lost between in a mating frenzy. Marith's rage roiled in the back of his mind as she spread her wings to glide down to the feeding grounds. The night breeze blew over them, barely cooling the heat that bubbled up inside her. Below, humans, puny, weak little creatures, scuttled around lighting torches to guide her way. As if she needed it. She could smell the meat milling around, frightened of the bronzes that gathered on the edge of the weir bowl. She'd give them a better reason to be frightened. She'd... Pain yanked Tony back into his own mind. Somehow, he tripped on the smooth stone floor. His knees had been scraped raw by the fall, leaving little smears of bright red blood against the polished rock. He pushed himself back upright and stumbled on, hoping he had the right direction. It was harder to separate from her now than after a fall, even. Marith wanted to wrap him up and carry him along, with her in control. He couldn't let that happen. Had to keep her from eating, had to keep her from going between. Hands tugged at him, and he followed blindly, fighting the pull of Marith's mind. Her claws tore into a herd beast, ripping it into chunks without even bothering to use her teeth. Hunger almost doubled him over, but the hands kept pulling him along. Then, the cool dimness of the glow baskets gave way to the sharp points of torches and the silvery glow of the two moons overhead. Satisfaction rippled through him as he felt her sink her teeth into a haunch. "Marith, no!" he yelled, so loudly that other dragons protested sleepily. They didn't matter, though. The only thing he could think of was Marith and keeping her under control. "Blood it. Blood only." She hissed and mandled her wings, too infuriated to even form a coherent argument. In the dark, her usually blue eyes glowed red. Tony bent his will against hers, fighting with everything he had to keep her from swallowing the meat. Marith hissed again, but finally bent her head to the herd beast's throat and began sucking it dry. The bronzes that had woken up gathered around at a respectful distance, eyes whirling orange with their own hungers. There were only four that Tony could feel. Four was good. It was a number he could keep control of, even in a mating flight. Dead meat thudded to the ground as Marith finished with the herd beast. The next one didn't even have time to squeal before the dragon had torn open its throat. She fought him again, reaching for the soft belly with open jaws. He held firm, fighting not to let their teeth, her teeth, sink into the meat that steamed so invitingly. Rage at being denied again almost sent him back to his knees, but finally she latched onto the gaping throat again. Tony could feel riders crowding around him like impatient bronzes, warm bodies blocking the breeze. He shoved at them, trying to win himself room to breathe.
It was too much, claustrophobic and cloying. He needed to cool off, to get air on his skin. They would push things, bronzes always did, overeager and demanding, but he needed air. Give him room. A steady, solid presence made itself known at his back, jolting Tony as he shoved at the others.
You're panicking him. Move.
Tony blinked, realizing faintly that he'd closed his eyes. The other bodies moved away, and he could feel their reluctance and their dragons prickling at his edges. But the breeze was back. Steve. It was Steve. That worked. That was good. He trusted Steve to take care of him. Merith screamed and attacked another herd beast, not even needing a reminder before she began to drain it dry. That was three. She'd fly soon. Merith never blooded more than four. Soon they'd be in the air, high above the useless humans and far ahead of the even more useless bronzes. Panic made Tony reel backwards against Steve. He couldn't do this. He wasn't ready. Hadn't picked a stand-in, hadn't even had the courage to talk to Steve about it. Everything was going to be ruined. Steve would be disgusted with him, and Merith would be unhappy because Tony would be unhappy, and that would just spiral out to the whole weird... Tony! Someone shook him, snapping his head on his neck. Tony, you're losing it. He was. He could feel her ripping into the meat, taking advantage of his slip. Tony locked his will around her, forcing the great golden head to lift up away from the downed animal. It was like prying at a steel bar with his fingers. Slowly, she pulled away, growling at him. And then it didn't matter anymore. Like a door being slammed open, the blood she drank settled hot and thick in Merith's stomach. The humans, the terrified meat, even the bronzes. None of it mattered at all. She wanted to fly, high and fast away from everything. Tony felt himself sink deeper into Merith. Her heat scorched him, racing through his veins as she lifted her wings to the sky in challenge. Riders crowded him, not even held back by Steve's looming presence. But that didn't matter either. The only thing that meant anything was the open sky above. With a last scream of defiance, Merith flung herself skyward, and the last bit of Tony slipped away with her. Distantly, he could feel himself being scooped up by a dragon, but the rest of him was locked away inside Merith. There was nothing but them, and the bronzes far behind. After fighting so long, it felt good to stretch their wings. Desire curled through them, but it could wait. Freedom beckoned. Bend and Hold rolled away below, a few lights glittering in its windows. They wheeled, turning neatly over in sheer exuberance as it passed by. Twin moons hung overhead, their light coloring the ground below in shades of gray. Tony often found night flying beautiful and serene in a way daytime flight couldn't match. Now, though, he was too preoccupied to appreciate it. Nothing mattered except the flight itself. Nothing could stop them like this. They were too fast. Even the bronzes had fallen far behind. They flew so high that the air was thin and as sharp as knives, and then folded their wings and dove, almost touching the ground before pulling up to repeat the maneuver. Time drifted into meaninglessness, with only the moons and themselves to keep it. There was nothing in all of Pern like flying. The freedom of flight couldn't hold their attention forever, though. The bronzes had used their play to shorten their lead, and were close enough that they could identify individuals. One had fallen behind, but that still left three. Camrith dominated the other two with his size, but they, Ardenth and Eanth, weren't small either. Big, strapping bronzes, all of them, and smart enough to wake up to fly her. A guilty thrill shivered down them. They were going to have fun. Merith Tony slowed, letting their wings stretch into an easy glide as they came in over the males. Ardenth was sweet enough. He'd caught them once before, and while normally they would be happy to let him try again, they had other plans this time. They fell onto his back, tangling his wings in their claws long enough to feel the bronze lose lift. The moment they felt his weight dragging at them, they let go, forcing Ardenth to drop like a stone. By the time he righted himself, they'd be too far ahead. One more to go. Ianth was no bigger than Ardenth had been, but he was wilier, and he'd seen them force the other bronze out. They backed wing just in time to keep from being tangled in his wings, then focused on gaining height. The flight had gone on long enough that they were starting to tire, but there wasn't time to make a mistake. There would only be one chance. The bronze stayed beneath them, watching to see what they would do. They were in control of the flight, and the males knew it. Ian rose slightly higher, excitement and interest making his tail lash the air behind him. Faint objections hammered in the back of their mind, strange and senseless things from the human half. They could pick Ian, and the objections would vanish. But they didn't want Ian. Vagaries of the wind forced the two males to drift apart, opening a sliver of free air. Seeing their chance, Merith Tony dove, tucking in their claws and wings to keep from being entangled as much as possible. Solid, steady Camerith didn't flinch, but Ianth was worked up enough that he dodged. It wasn't much, but it was enough to put him behind. He could catch up, but they had no intention of giving him a chance. They twisted in the air, spreading their wings to catch themselves as they tangled their claws in Camerith's. Surprise at the move made him try to jolt higher. Hadn't he ever had a queen catch him before? But they had him well and truly captured. Just to get the point across, they twined around him, locking them body to body in free fall. And then Tony jolted back to himself so suddenly it was like the stop at the end of a short fall. He swayed on his feet, clutching at the body pressed up against his. Merith wasn't separated from him. She'd never be separated from him completely, but he had enough distance to feel his own reactions to the flight. He'd never had a flight quite that intense before. He could still feel the rising ecstasy as the two dragons remained locked together, the wind in his ears as they fell. Tony. Someone shook him by the shoulders. By his bare shoulders. When had he taken off his robe? Keep it together. You have to. The voice was slow and thick, but it snapped him out of his daze. They were in the bedchamber, the last sounds of everyone else filing out already fading. He blinked upwards, meeting a pair of blue eyes that he dreamed about more than once. They were dilated in the glow light, the blue just a thin band of bright color. Steve. Steve, who he'd wanted for so long and had never dared touch. Tony couldn't imagine why, when Steve was just so perfect. And now he was Tony's, every finger width of him. Thick, firm chest muscle was hard under his palms as his fingertips traced the thread scores he found there. He shoved. Steve toppled backwards into the bed, his surprised shout lost as Tony kissed him. With the two redding dragons driving them, Steve didn't stand a chance of resisting. Sharp, stinging pain from his skinned knees made itself known, a bitter counterpoint to the pulse through his veins. Rough fabric from Steve's drawing pants caught against Tony's skin as they rocked together. The knot was made of some sort of thick, rope-like material that took much too long to loosen. By the time he did, Tony was reaching the end of his dragon-burned patience,
He yanked at the pants, barely lucid enough to notice Steve helping him get rid of them.
Skin slid against sweat-drenched skin.
Tony bit back a moan as Steve's hands gripped his hips. There was a good lubricant somewhere in the weir. Just then, he couldn't remember where. Trying to pull away to think about it just resulted in Steve's skin sinking into his throat. "Stay," Steve muttered, his voice a dark rasp. His knees bracketed Tony's hips, squeezing tightly enough to make it clear that Tony wasn't going anywhere. "Next time. This. Now." Even if Tony had been able to think of a reply, Steve picked just that moment to line up their arousals. Hot, hard weight dragged against him. It was all Tony could do to keep his eyes open. Actually pulling away became as impossible as walking to the Red Star. Kisses became short, broken, their mouths sliding together barely long enough to connect. Tony's concentration was shattered,
leaving only enough space in his head to process salty skin under his tongue and the roll of the body beneath his. It was impossible to regain when Steve's thumb found that place right there.
Steve lost control first, blonde head slamming back into the quilts. Liquid warmth spread between them, smoothing the glide of Tony's arousal against him. It only took a few moments for Tony to follow, spilling himself across Steve's stomach. His arms trembled and gave way, folding under him and collapsing them both to the bed. There were things he needed to say, but his mind was still somewhere between midair over bend and hold and the hard body under him. Trying to wrap his tongue around words required too much focus. Steve's heartbeat pounded rapidly under his cheek. Tony tried to concentrate on it, using the thump to ground himself. That proved to be a tactical error. His harsh breathing eased, then slowed as Steve's heart rate slowed too. Before he could stop it, exhaustion swept him away. Tony woke up with his face buried in the middle of someone's chest and the same someone's arms tossed over his shoulders. That, on the whole, wasn't very unusual. What was unusual was that said someone was stroking his hair. Sunlight snuck behind his eyelids from the open shutters, and he was positive he hadn't left his open. Waking up after a mating flight was a little like waking up from too much drink. Who and where were always prominent questions, only sometimes followed by when, and, on one very memorable occasion, what. The advantage of mating over alcohol, as far as he could tell, was that the hangover was much milder, and the sheer, smug contentment Meredith radiated afterwards tended to make up even for that. He could almost remember the night before in dim flashes of naked skin and desperation, but details slipped away before he could grab them. After a flight for Weir leadership, Ware was probably in his own bed, though clearly someone had been in recently if the windows were open. That still left who up for debate. It would have been nice if there actually had been anything to debate. Slowly, Tony rolled his eyes upward, past traces of thread scarring and a still bandaged shoulder, to a face he could probably map the contours of in his sleep. Steve's eyes weren't even open yet. If it hadn't been for the steady slide of his fingers along Tony's scalp, Tony never would have guessed he was awake. It was comforting, but it was probably meant to be. Steve was too nice for his own good. No doubt he tried to convince Tony that they could pretend it hadn't happened, and wouldn't even realize that would hurt even more than a falling out. He needed to add how to his morning after checkup. Specifically, how to extract himself from the bed without ruining whatever friendship they had left. He tried to ease away from Steve casually, but the arm on his shoulders tightened and effectively ruined that idea. A quick check with Merith showed her deliberately ignoring his difficulties, too busy basking in her own afterglow with Camerith. There'd be no help from that quarter. Steve. Steve's eyes didn't open. If you're about to apologize, you can save your breath. It's natural. You should know that better than I do. Tony's mouth snapped shut. If Steve didn't want an apology, then what did he want? I could have chosen a stand-in, he tried again. If I'd been smarter, you wouldn't have had to... sleep with him. It shouldn't have been hard to say, but it caught in the back of his throat anyways. You know, for the Weir leadership. Even though Steve's eyes were closed, he could see the lids twitch as he rolled them in exasperation. You weren't the only one who could have chosen a stand-in. I didn't sleep with you to become Weir leader. Then because Merith is more lecherous than a green and couldn't wait a 7 day.
I am awake, you know,
his dragon grumbled from the ledge outside. It's true, Tony shot back. Put out that she was curled up with Camerith, while he had to try to figure out how to get away from Steve. Not because of that either. Steve finally opened his eyes. In the morning sunlight, his blue irises looked brighter than usual, but there was a definite sense that he was barely restraining himself from glaring. You really don't get it, do you?
Of course he doesn't,
Camerith butted in, reminding Tony yet again of how hard it could be to have a private conversation with a dragon metaphorically on his shoulder. Or, as in this case, two dragons.
Merith said that he's being stupid.
Thank you, members of the audience, Tony muttered, resting his forehead against Steve's exceptionally well-muscled chest. Is there anything else you'd like to share? Maybe what I had for dinner last night? There was a pause for thought before Camerith replied.
You didn't eat dinner. You were working on your armor and told Merith that...
Steve, the wary bastard, was laughing at him. That's enough of that. I think I can take it from here. At least he was kind enough to speak aloud. Thank you so much for that. Tony could feel his eyelashes dragging against Steve's chest when he blinked. It was easier just to let his eyes stay shut. Then he didn't have to worry about accidentally meeting Steve's eyes again. So what am I not getting? A lot of things. Steve kept sliding his fingers through Tony's hair, which made it hard to brace himself against what he knew was coming. For one, I'm not upset that you didn't get a stand-in, so you can forget about that. You already said that. I meant it. Which really only meant that he didn't hold Merith's bad timing against Tony. It was something, at least. And now you're going to say that we can still be friends. Without looking, Tony knew that Steve's expression would be one of wary confusion. He pushed on before Steve, or one of the dragons, could derail him. I'm okay with that. Weir leaders and Weir woman have hated each other before and managed the Weir. We're already dragon links ahead of that. At the moment, at least. Who knew how long it would be before Steve realized how uncomfortable being technically weirmated to a man was, when he'd only ever shown attraction to women. What? Of course we're still friends. Steve let out an annoyed growl and dropped his head back against the bed. He didn't even have a pillow. It bounced his chest under Tony's cheek, making him briefly consider trying to move again. All right. This is the way it's going to be. I talk, you listen. And when I'm done, you can have your say. Is that good? Not really, but Tony could tell he wasn't going to have much choice. Steve had been a wing leader. He was perfectly capable of talking over the top of Tony's objections. Sure. Good. To start, I'm not upset that we slept together. I'm the opposite of upset. You're not even interested in men, Tony blurted out, then silently cursed, He hadn't even made it a whole minute before breaking the rules Steve had set down. Their friendship was already on loose sand. If he couldn't even follow simple directions, it was only going to collapse faster. He cringed, waiting for Steve's reply. Steve didn't make him wait for long. Tell that to Sam. He might not stop laughing for a few days, but that would be good for him. Tony forgot himself and looked up, eyes wide. The new Weir leader didn't seem as though he was being dishonest, but Tony knew very well that Steve could win a championship at bald-faced lying. He just had too much personal honor to actually use the ability. Sam? Yes, Sam. There was definitely an amused tilt to Steve's mouth. When he turned his head, a shaft of sunlight caught his hair and made it shine golden. It was every trite cliche he'd ever heard, but it fit Steve without being soppy. Or maybe Tony was just incapable of avoiding cliche when it came to Steve. Sam. That was actually worse than Sharon. At least with Sharon, Tony had never stood a chance. Their friendship might not have been what it once had, but Tony would have known where he stood. More importantly, Steve wouldn't have felt obligated to him. Something in his expression must have warned Steve. And we're not still together, so you can stop worrying about that, too. If I wasn't interested in you, I would have asked someone to stand with me, or even just sat out the flight. You'll make a good Weir leader, though, Tony protested. And so will you. Even his own thoughts were starting to sound repetitive. Steve was casually burning down every argument he'd spent 5 turns constructing.
Because you're acting thick,
Meredith insisted, her voice foggy with sleep.
Stop it. He likes you, and you like him, and I don't want to have to come in there. The door is too small, and I'm comfortable.
There wasn't much she could say to either of them. Tony finally slipped upward to rest his head against Steve's shoulder, ignoring the disgusting evidence of their night together as they peeled apart. It looked like neither of them had so much as twitched during the night. I don't want to mess this up. Not just the leadership. You and me. Hey. Steve's arm slipped over Tony's waist. It wasn't exactly comfortable, with their hips and knees bumping, but Tony shifted until it was at least an ignorable amount of discomfort. You won't mess up anything. We'll just take it one day at a time, and it'll work. Curled up together the way they were, Tony could almost believe him. Weir leader and Weir woman. Or Weir lord. Whatever it was called, Tony could do it. It was just a matter of taking it step by step and paying attention, which was something he'd learned to do in his father's workshop. It felt a little like lying to himself, but he'd done that before, too. Okay, we can do this, he thought, hoped. But we need to do something first. Steve lifted his eyebrows in question, so Tony pressed on. The very first thing we need to do is to find a better titer than Weir Woman. Fury's never going to let that go. Steve blinked up at him in momentary bewilderment, then chuckled and bent to kiss Tony's forehead. We'll come up with something, he promised. And armor on the Queen Riders at least. We'll discuss it. Meredith huffed happily, like a warm breeze in the back of his skull.
There. Isn't that better?
Tony smiled into Steve's shoulder. Yeah. It is. The end. This story was recorded for ITPE 2020 for Dr. Fumbles McStupid. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. Full disclosure, I'm not super familiar with Pern other than when I read a use about it, so I did my best with the like pronunciations and stuff like that, and I hope it didn't throw the story too much or anything. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. Bye.